Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from North Pole?
This is really weird. Anyway, this is March 30th, and we're wondering what happened to our sound again here. Oh, should not be muted. things that we are covering today is the births, interesting births today. Peter the great Russian conductor, and not conductor, excuse me, Tsar, the great Russian Tsar was born today. He's the guy that tried to modernize Russia. We have Jethro Tull. Now, you think that's a rock band, but it isn't. Jethro Tull was an English agronomist in the 16th century. He was the guy who invented a machine drawn by horses to seed large tracts of land. Also, a horse-drawn reaper. And, of course, you hear today about Jethro Tull, the rock band. And I don't know why they took that name, but they were also innovative in the rock music field. Also, today is the birthday of Verlaine. He's probably known to people who fought in the French Resistance. They used, when they were broadcasting in their secret radios, the radios they were trying to hide from the Nazis, they use strains from his poetry. And one of the thing that the stanza that signaled that the Normandy invasion was about to begin was, "My heart is wounded," or with a languorous, I forgot the exact wordings, but the Germans were picking up on this with their counterintelligence, and they were looking for, listening for these particular phrases. What else? Excuse me. We have the birthday of Vincent van Gogh, born today. The guy who cut off his ear. We also have Irving Thalberg, who was died in a very strange way. He was a Hollywood movie entrepreneur, impresario. He died in a what was suspected of being a homosexual assault with a thing stuck in his one of his body orifices. Also, Frankie Lane, visual voice, he was born today. McGeorge Bundy, one of the architects of the Cuban Missile Crisis response by the Kennedy administration, national security advisor, born in Boston, Massachusetts, and supposed to be a very arrogant man. Warren Beatty, the brother of Shirley MacLaine, he was born today. And those of you who've seen the movie Reds, which is about Tom Reed, who was the only non-Russian buried in the Kremlin Wall. I don't know if he's still there after Perestroika. Then we had Eric Clapton, the English rock musician, another one with Jethro Tull. He was born today. And then those of you who watch today's FBI, Joseph Kelly, he was born today. Then the deaths, we have the assassination of Mahatma Gandhi today, 1948, and this was plotted by some Indian homosexuals. And if you there was a movie with the German, forgot his name, he played the assassin, and it was called 9 Hours to Rama. I think that was what it was called. And, of course, there was this trial of the homosexuals, and not all of them were, but the ringleaders were. And then we had James Cagney died today, a great actor. A rare movie, which we acquired for our archives, Lion in the Street. Came out after All the Kings, the one on Huey Long. Was it All the King's Men, I think. Boy, I'm losing it. And then we had the Queen Mother. She died at 101 years. old. She was the in the movie The King's Speech. She was King George's consort. She was the queen, and she lived. She was Scottish, and she wasn't royalty, just like the bride to be William. And we have one of her famous statements was in the afternoon she wanted a drink, and she had some gays working for her, and she says, "Look, this old queen wants a drink now. Get me one. Or wants is thirsty, and I want some scotch." And then among the interesting events which precipitated the split of the English branch of the Roman Catholic Church, Henry VIII divorced Catherine of Aragon because she couldn't produce a male heir. And then today, this has a San Francisco connection, Richard Badisco's great ancestor was involved in the Alaska Purchase, one of our best investments we've ever made, and that was one of the highlights of the Andrew Johnson administration. Among the questions, political policy questions, is should musicians get involved in promoting the propaganda of their countries during wartime? And Toscanini was one of the greatest conductors in our time, along with Wilhelm Mengelberg. You still hear his recordings today, and also Wilhelm Furtwängler, the German. And Toscanini got involved with Mussolini when Mussolini was working to become dictator of Italy. And he was a socialist. He was not a lawyer. In fact, he was a teacher and an editor. And here's what Toscanini said later on. These are his words about his relationship with Toscanini.
"And to think that I was once a friend of the great delinquent. I got to know Mussolini. I was even on his electoral
slate. Supposed to be on the air, but I don't hear
him.
You supported Mussolini?
And
this is very
bizarre. Disaster.
Remember, at the time, Mussolini was left of the Socialist Party.
I repented 40s. Even before that criminal came to power in 22.
The International, which was the communist.
Yes, before that, Walter and I attended one of these secret meetings.
Arranged during World War II
and
Russia.
Came over and tried to get me to join. Then Marinetti,
when Russia was selling two intentions,
he came over
became apparent that he really wanted to
persuade me to put my name to the
Tuscany.
Yes, everyone was surprised.
Was banned.
Telephoned me.
The interview of Toscanini when he talked about why he supported Mussolini. He got in trouble on this one. Now, where is it?
"And to think that I was once a friend of the great delinquent.
The great who?
I got to know Mussolini. I was even on his electoral slate. I supported him.
You supported Mussolini?
Say, yes, me. And it was a total disaster.
Remember, at the time, Mussolini was left of the Socialist Party. Very different from when he created fascism.
Listen, I repented even before that criminal came to power in 22. 3 years before that, Walter and I attended one of his secret meetings. Mussolini was speaking. He came over and tried to get me to join.
Mon Dieu.
Then...
Marinetti.
Marinetti.
Poeta futurista.
Si. He came over later. He persuaded me to put my name to the slate.
Seriously?
Yes. Everyone was surprised. People telephoned me. What? Toscanini with Mussolini? Yes, Toscanini with Mussolini. I'm sick of hearing everybody to talk, and doing nothing about it.
When that opportunity swung from left to right, I openly turned against it. What a monster he was. As long as I was at La Scala, I refused to hang those mandatory portraits of Mussolini or the king. What a horrible period.
The fascist who said that Papa was unpatriotic. After all he'd done for Italy.
I had conducted the Anthem Italiano many times during the Great War to raise money for the war effort. And I conducted patriotic music with a military band on the front in 1917. We played on Monte Santo under enemy fire. But I would never play the Antifascista if my life depended on it. I never feared death. I think about it every day. With a set.
Yeah, that was the voice of the words of Toscanini explaining why he supported Mussolini. Now, other conductors got into trouble on this. Mengelberg was the greatest Dutch conductor. For 50 years, he formed the Concertgebouw. Made into one of the world's greatest orchestras. It still is today. It's the Great Dutch Orchestra. And when the Nazis overran Holland, or they surrendered very early on, in 1940, he continued to play symphony concerts in Holland and in Germany. And the Dutch never forgave him, and after the war, they fired him from the orchestra. He never conducted another orchestra again. Fender was Wilhelm Furtwängler, also one of the greatest musical conductors of all time, German. I was also a composer, and he worked for the Nazis. He played at munitions factories and events for Hitler, and at the end, the Nazis turned against him and tried to put him in a concentration camp, but he fled across the mountains into Switzerland. After the war, when the Americans occupied their part of Germany, he was put on. There was a denazification of a lot of people, including musicians. There's a famous movie starring Christopher Plummer, which gets into Furtwängler's alleged collaboration. But he was exonerated and later went on for, I've seen 1945. He died in 1952 of pneumonia, very young, actually. He's about 68. Toscanini died at 81 or 82. And Mengelberg was 81. Furtwängler went on to the British, conduct British orchestras. He was going to be appointed conductor of the Chicago Symphony, but the Jewish groups were so angry and never trusted him, and they blocked his appointment as conductor of the Chicago Symphony. So he stayed in Europe, made recordings, and died in Switzerland in 1952. Unfortunately, I had his... a clip from our archives here, but I can't find it, and maybe we have too much stuff up here. So anyway, what we're going to play in substitute, excuse me, is what Churchill said about Japan, since Japan is constantly in our news today about we discovered they've hidden more things on the nuclear mess. And they're going to have to bury those nuclear factories. Again, the question I have raised is, and I've been asked this, is are Americans who were over there, especially American servicemen who were serving in the military over there, if they are infected or contaminated with this nuclear waste and they get sick, do they have a cause of action against the Japanese government? and or Tokyo Electric and the manufacturers of those reactors. So far, there is a thing called the Status of Forces Agreement, but I can't find anything on it. I've asked other military people. So this is going to be very interesting because we're convinced that the situation is far worse than they're reporting it and have reported on it. And so we're going to see how many American servicemen and women get infected by that nuclear mess. I'm going to play this little clip, Churchill talking about, it's a rare speech he gave on Japan during World War II.
As soon as I heard last night that Japan had attacked the United States, my first feeling was that Parliament should be immediately summoned. We are fighting for the maintenance of a parliamentary system, and it is indispensable to our system of government that Parliament should play its full part in all the important acts of the state and on all the great occasions in the conduct of the war. The great number of members who attended, in spite of the shortness of the notice, shows the zeal and strictness with which the members of both houses attend to their duties. You will remember that a month ago, with the full approval of the nation and of the empire, I pledged the word of Great Britain that should the United States become involved in a war with Japan, a British declaration would follow within the hour. I therefore spoke to President Roosevelt on the Atlantic telephone last night with a view to arranging the timing of our respective declarations. The President told me that he would this morning send a message to Congress, and I assured him that we would follow immediately. However, it soon appeared that British territory in Malaya had also been the object of a Japanese attack. And later on, it was announced from Tokyo that the Japanese High Command, not the Imperial Japanese Government, but the Japanese High Command had declared that a state of war existed with Great Britain and the United States. In view of the attack and of this declaration, there was no need to wait for the declaration by Congress. And in any case, there is the complication that American time is nearly 6 hours behind ours. The cabinet, therefore, which met at 12:30 today, authorized an immediate declaration of war upon Japan. Instructions to this effect were sent to our ambassador at Tokyo and the Japanese chargé d'affaires in London, and his staff have been given their passports. Meanwhile, hostilities have already begun. The Japanese began a landing in British territory in northern Malaya at about 6 o'clock, that's 1 a.m. local time, yesterday. And they were immediately engaged by our troops who were there waiting for them. The Home Office measures against the Japanese nationals were set in motion a little after 10 last night. You will see, therefore, that no time has been lost, and you will see also that we are actually ahead of our engagements.
That was Churchill talking a rare speech on Japan, part of our great oratory series. Getting back to should musicians get involved in propaganda during wartime, remember what happened to Joan Baez, who was so-called anti-Vietnam War. She got blackballed, or however you want to put it. And even today, she never, before the war, she was, before the Vietnam War really heated up, she was quite a folk singer. But then she got involved in all kinds of radical leftist agendas, and she was called Phony Joni by, I think, Al Capp, the comic artist, cartoonist. And she never regained the stature that she once had in the public eye. So this is one of the dangers of musicians getting involved in the propaganda of their country during wartime. At least that's the way we see it. Now, among the things that people should be aware of, especially if you're concerned about the high cost of your auto insurance, one major national trucking company has installed monitoring devices in their trucks that will monitor, and that do monitor, the driving habits or lack of safe driving habits and observance of rules of the road, safety, seat belts, and all of that, of the drivers of their vehicles. And of course, that helps prevent accidents, and this is a self-insured company. My prediction is, and I think, I hope this happens, that in the near future, that Detroit, Tokyo, well, I don't know about Tokyo, but foreign manufacturers who export cars to the United States market will install these monitoring devices in their cars, and that all used cars that are sold will have to have them installed also. This will, and these monitoring devices should be turned in, will be turned in, when the driver renews or tries to renew their auto insurance, so the auto insurance company can review what's on that monitoring device to see if they're insured, if they want to continue to insure the driver, if he's a safe driver, he or she, or if he's reckless, to drop him. So, and therefore cut down on the high cost of auto insurance for safe drivers. There's just too many. There's an epidemic of reckless driving, arrogant drivers, people driving vehicles like SUVs that think they're Porsches. We're seeing a growing number of women who are extremely aggressive behind the wheel. There's no justification for this. Most of the accidents, according to the AAA, the American Automobile Association, or California Automobile Association, most of the accidents that we are experiencing are tailgating, that people follow too close for a variety of reasons. Either they don't know or just ignore the one car length for every 10 miles, and even more when the roads are slick or conditions, it's raining or snowing or whatever. The other things are people get angry. There's this anger on the road, and there have been conflicts, fisticuffs, knifing, shootings. And police need to crack down on this. Now, there's also this new phenomenon of texting and using cell phones. And, of course, Rich Bedisco and I and other safety-minded people think that people who violate the use of the cell phone, and they shouldn't even be using Bluetooth either because it's distracting, or are texting while driving, should be fined a minimum of $500 for the first offense, $1,000 for the second, and $5,000 for the third. And if they continue to yank their license. You know, in Finland, there was a driver who acquired, who was hit with a $20,000 fine for his parking tickets and reckless driving. I'm trying to get the full story on that. But, and then in France one year, the French go on holiday in August. The French government decided to crack down on reckless driving and drunken driving when the August holidays started in France. So what they did was they had these flying squads, I think it came out of Paris, and the French police, and they can be rough, stopped these cars that had violated their rules of the road and yanked the keys and the licenses and made these people hitchhike or take the bus if they could, or the train if they could afford it, to get back to Paris or wherever their home was. Maybe these drastic measures are needed to impress upon people that driving is a privilege, not a right, and you have a responsibility to drive safely and to be aware of the vehicles around you and not to take your temper tantrums out on the road, not to tailgate, not to use the cell phone. not to be drinking, not to be smoking pot, or in one case, a guy was getting oral sex when he crashed into another car. So these kind of crazy things go on. And incidentally, the court ruled against him. His insurer, he had to pay a big fine. I don't know what his insurer had to say about oral sex involved in a car collision. So we're going to close now because we've been having this problem lately with our communication system here. We're going to review this episode to see where the problem may be or if it's something I may have done by mistake. So we'll end with our theme, politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bet.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say, neither one. I never even met him.
I say, when you got a pair of jacks, better.
Politics and poker, politics and poker. Shuffle up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children. He's a game is rough.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrade.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll stay.
Raise your mind.
I'll fall.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in. Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panyashinkovich, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
Yes,
how about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run Al Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot, that's me.
Politics and poker, politics and poker. Play for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, running neck and neck.
I don't know if Senator Schumer, who behaved like a scumbag, was playing poker. Maybe he should play poker and keep his mouth shut. Anyway, Jack Cashel's book, I highly recommend it, Deconstructing Obama and What's the Matter with California. We will be back Friday, and I hope we have this communication problem resolved. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Good night.